So throughout this hour, we've been talking about anger and the role it can play in achieving social change. Yes, anger can separate us into partisan camps, but it can also inspire us to work together to achieve amazing things. Writer Michael Eric Dyson knows this firsthand, and his latest book, Tears We Cannot Stop, reads as a call to action to many Americans. He told Charles Monroe Kane why he wrote it.
You wrote this for white America. Obviously, it's in the title of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, because I think when white people, you know, hear about race, they think black people.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, let's talk about white people. See how uncomfortable it is? Then that's how uncomfortable it is for us. But you never think about that. You never have to peel back the layers and think about what it means to be white. And so I wanted to address white brothers and sisters, because if they don't change, ain't nothing happening, man. Black people can get converted and think about this in different ways. It makes no difference unless white brothers do too and sisters do too.
So you said unless they change, or unless we change, I'm white. What do you expect?
I want the conversation to start. I want a conversion factor to happen. I want people's mind to open. I want them to think seriously about it, get angry, get upset, get mad, get resentful, but move and think about what this might mean.
You know, for you to write a book like this, when I looked through this, I saw a lot of grief. Was this really painful for you to write?
Extremely painful for me to write. It was painful because I had to dig beneath the objectivity of my scholarly craft and vocation and come up with a personal voice, something deep inside of me. See, partly my success has to do with keeping those feelings at bay, keeping a clinical distance between myself and that anger that might, you know, wrathfully articulate itself. And in order for me to be successful in white America, I have to suppress that anger. But now, writing this book, I have to unleash it. The heartbreak, the pain, the suffering, the grief. I wanted to communicate that.
You know, it's interesting, you know, for me, you know, I think that our country has never properly dealt with the legacy of slavery to Jim Crow. And I think mass incarceration is a major problem of race in our country. But I don't know what to do next. What should I do? What should we do, white people, do with the similar emotions?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think to speak out, for white people to say something about it, it's not just a black and brown problem. If white folk could get as enraged about that as about animals and weeping, and they should cry tears on television and weep over animals, but my God, stepping over the bodies of black and brown people to do so, it's not an either-or thing. You can be concerned about animals and concerned about human beings, but many black people think that white folk of a certain inclination care more about their animals than they do about their fellow human beings who are black and brown.
Do you think white people aren't empathetic to what's happening to you?
Well, often they are not, because it doesn't happen to them. Look, that's most human beings. That's not just white people.
Yeah.
You know, stuff happens to you. You own a red Corvette, you notice Corvettes more. Remember, as it was said, the opposite of love is not hate, but indifference. And so Black Lives Matter says we matter. Stop thinking that we don't matter. So, yeah, there is a lack of empathy for sure.
You know, it's interesting. I'm reading your book, and I'm struck again now hearing you talk. The answer seems so clear hearing you talk. It's diversity. I need to make sure that I go out of my way to create a lifestyle where I'm around people who are black, just to understand what's happening. We all need to be eating food together. You know what I mean? That's what we need to be doing.
Yeah, it sounds simple, but it's so true, man. And when you meet other people, when you have a black friend and or many black friends, and you see how they're treated, and you know, damn, I did the same thing.
Right.
I didn't get treated like that. So you can readily answer for us as people of color. We're going to commission you and deputize you right now to go back to white America.
Okay.
You could tell the truth in a way that many white brothers and sisters seem not to know.
I was thinking, when I think about diversity, I think about people I know that are white, that are well-intentioned, if I can use that. And they have this fear, and it's a different fear than you have. And our big fear is that we get involved in the black church, or we get involved somewhere civically, and we make a mistake. And when we make a mistake, we're considered racist, and we're scared to death. Like, you calling me a racist right now for something I said would just destroy me. So we're so afraid of it, and so fragile, and so insecure in who we are, that we're afraid to engage because we're afraid to be called that. What should we do with that?
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's honest. And I can understand that, honestly. You know, I can understand. As a man, I'm trying to be a feminist, but dang, I mess up and the ladies are going to call me, wow, you're still a sexist. Well, you know what? Do they suffer more than my hurt feelings? I think so. Is rape worse than my hurt feelings? I think so. But when you win people over and they see you're sincere, even when you make a mistake, they're going to say, you know what? But that person has a good heart. They're really trying to do the right thing. They're really here in there swinging with us. And you get different kind of brownie points, literally, and different kind of
I'm deputizing and getting brownie points. This is a great day.
So, you know, it's a different situation. And, yeah, there's a risk, but the reward is greater. Mm-hmm. That, I think, outweighs whatever risk one might take in order to render that service.
You know, I got to ask you a question. I'm sitting last night reading your book, and by chance, my wife, she has a copy. It's a book version of Langston Hughes's Let America Be America Again, and I've never read it. So I pick it up, and I read it. It's amazing. It's beautiful. It's righteous. It has a very similar message, and it struck me. It was written 80 years ago, and I'm like, what has really changed? How do you keep hope alive?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I talked to Jesse Jackson, the author of that phrase, and that's one way I do it. Keep hope alive. But, you know, you said something important there. It's hope. It's not optimism. Optimism is a shallow virtue. It's predicated upon reading the tea leaves and seeing if we're going to have a positive versus a negative outcome and what is the likelihood. But hope is something against the obvious, against the evident, the revealed world in juxtaposition to an imagined world. You know, I question many elements of the revealed religion and how people practice it, because I got a lot of arguments with that. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, my religion is love. I don't care if you claim you'd be a Christian like me, you're a believer like me, but if you believe in some of this madness of homophobia and sexism and racism, I'm not down with you. And if you claim to be an atheist, but you're practicing love and doing the right thing, then that's my religion. So I know that doesn't sit well with a lot of people, but that's what I believe.
Michael Eric Dyson. He was talking with Charles Monroe Kane about his new book, Tears We Cannot Stop, A Sermon to White America.